Yeah, just to explain that the committee, there are two co-chairs with me, and for those of you who don't know, our committee, what we do is for each bill, we allocate one or two individual members to proceed with. So obviously some of the members are very new, and it's not fair to throw them in at the deep end. So when we co-chair, each of us has the same sort of rights, except that we're guided by the chair. It'll rotate between Comrade Kolwane and Comrade Watt. But it doesn't stop me as the chair of the committee to intervene, because ultimately I'm accountable for the book. The second thing to say is that we have a policy from Tomita Kondo. He has to go and see a colleague who's in hospital. And somebody else, so Peter said to me, but he's here. Oh yes, she's just coming down. Then to also say that when we're going to proceed with the bill, if there are some policy issues where there's no resolution. So, for example, on licensing, we are meeting in a small subcommittee that's closed. It's just the chair, the two co-chairs and the lawyers at 3:30 p.m. Even if the DOC is not able to give us a check, because of time running out, as a committee we need to, as a subcommittee in the first instance, we need to apply our minds to the concept they have and see whether it's acceptable. So those who are meant to be there at 3:30, is it technically in E305, is that right? I think it's E305. At 3:30 to 5:30. That meeting is a closed meeting, I apologize. It's a closed meeting of the departments, the two departments concerned and their lawyers, the state law advisors, and the three chairs, and anybody else who wants to come from the committee. Peter has suggested a two-track process that we keep the deeming provision and we amend the ETA. So I think maybe you should come to say that. And then we have to make a decision about the CASA, because we have to recognize the independence of the CASA and the otherwise the broader role they play. So at tea time we can just discuss with the relevant parties whether it's appropriate for the CASA to be there. Our hourly regime is okay, but I don't know. It's really pre-negative terrain, that's negotiations. We ask you to consult with the CASA. So we can discuss that around tea time. So that's 3:30 to 5:30. So Edward, can you arrange for whoever to come to E305? Well, now would you check whether we're meeting here or E305? And because it's a subcommittee meeting, it's just mentioned parliament. They don't provide the key and so on. No, it's a rule. I mean, we've done the thing since 1998. I've never had a problem. Strictly speaking, even if I have to meet you alone, if it's a committee, I'm not paying for the key. I'm not going to run around and organize the key myself. Thank you for reminding me. What would we do without you? So now, what we're going to do is answer to Comrade Wong. Obviously, what the department is going to do is tell us what each clause means, which you've done personally. You first tell us what the clause means, and then why you're amending it, and what the amendment means, and even tell us who. Unfortunately, you are one step ahead of us. We haven't got what we call the daily hand document. Eric Poscati is not able to do it. What we do is we have a document that says clause one, these are the amendments proposed, and in brackets we put the organization. So we have to come back. This is the first stage. Because we can't rely on you, with due respect, we're not saying you honestly. We're handing our job to you. We can't rely on the executive to do that. So Eric, by Monday we'll have our documents. So the department has to be very patient. We're going to come back to these clauses once we have our... We call it the Boscati, actually, because Boscati is going to do it. So call the Boscati. The Boscati will actually have it in a table form. Unfortunately, if we cannot find the Dominique or the Hene or the... it's named after the person who does it. So it's called the Boscati. It's just done in a table form, which has every clause. But it is very easy to process fast, because we've already rejected some of those amendments and accepted them in the phase one. So this is phase two, where we are going through without our research team being ready. And then phase three, we'll go through it again quickly, and phase four will go. Okay, so having said that, Mark,
Chairperson, just some other information before we stick on with the process, with your permission.
Yeah.
the document, the official document of meetings of committees, today's meeting for is not on in this document. And you know, we serve on other committees as well, so we have to make an apology. And then they told us that we haven't got a committee because they can't find our committee in the document. So if you can just do this in the future, you know.
Okay, no.
Well,
but
that would
be very good. What
happened there, Panaki? I will check on that. Yeah, I submitted everything to Lisa.
Because the problem is they don't accept your apology on the other side.
No, you're right. We must attend to this matter. And actually, said to Bonani, he's been exemplary actually in his performance, given somebody who's just joined us a few months ago, but also on their side, you know, so on all of their side, they can have issues there too. But you are right to raise it. We thank you for that. And Bonani will find out what happened and he will give you a reply.
Give us a minute. Just a second thing. At the meeting, I think it was last week, or the week before last week, he said that we will receive copies, of some document. I can't remember which of the newspaper clubs or whatever it was.
Yeah, we are actually
looking for that.
Thank you very much. Over to you. Can I just finish one last thing? When we go through it, except for the definition, now here you must come in and say whether you want to use a different system. I can only speak of the system I've used all these years, and other teams do it differently. But what I'm used to is, the definitions we come back to again, we go through them, but we don't amend them particularly, unless it's obvious. We come back to the definitions, because the definitions can change based also on the content and so on. So we begin to approve from clause 1, from clause 1 of the book. Whatever it is, we go beyond the definition. So you will take us through the preamble and the definition, and then when we start looking at objects of the act onwards, then we begin to consider amendments. Because we always do the definitions at the end. But I mean, Wong, you guys will agree differently. Fine. Thank you.
Okay. Are we going to have the department go through with that? Just the first paragraph.
Chair, just for information purposes and order of presentation, we have handed out to everyone a marked-up version, which is also on the screen. This marked-up version is based on the content of the bill as certified by the state law advisors. As you are aware, we first published a bill for comment, and that's the comment the department received was based on the published bill. Subsequent to that, the affected changes, and those changes principally related to the licensing and the scheduling in terms of the PSMA, those are the material changes affected to the certified bill. The presentation today is based on the certified bill, just for your information. We have also prepared for the information of the committee a PowerPoint presentation which summarizes the comments the department received, not necessarily comments received, the department received, and how we have dealt with that comment. We can circulate this. The markup affected in the draft bill that we've given you essentially represents those comments that we believe require changes. And secondly, also changes that we have consequentially also made for further insight. So it's a combination of the two. We will highlight where changes were initiated by ourselves as a consequence of discussions thus far. So if I can then, maybe we could just distribute the other presentation to the benefit of the committee.
Before you start,
the committee also proposed various changes already. That's been included. And then the other thing to say to report back to the committee is that NeoCell has got certain specific issues around its commercial arrangements. And they, you know, we just see that the committee, we are not corporate lawyers. We are, you know, we don't have the capacity to
like fine-tune commercial agreements. We're not a court either judge. But at the same time, given that there's a degree of relevance to what commercial agreement is secured between the department and Realtel, and it affects the soul, we have, on the panel side, money, what we see is intelligent interviews and comes to consensus, and then report back to the committee. Because there's no need for us to get involved. Personally, I'm not particularly qualified to be the judge. So we've asked the two committee chairs to work with them and come to a solution. But as for their formal submission, if I can quickly say what, you know, before we start, so we know that we're down to the only outstanding policy issue at Realtel. So if I can quickly, I forgot to do this right when I was speaking. So let's quickly do this. But on Realtel, they themselves, having listened to everybody, I must be fair to them, tuned down their what they're really requesting. They think the issues are being addressed. But for example, they if you look at their submission dated 31st of July, their main concern was the delays in the license. Mm-hmm. And from what I can tell, unless mm-hmm. they are otherwise funded, and they can still do so, they are okay with this idea of going to the ECA Amendment Act. Their concern remains that there are practical problems about how long it will actually take. But the decision about whether it goes to the ECA Act or whether it remains in being or closed is something that they don't seem to have a view on, and if they do, they will either write to us or let us through in some verbal form here, they can speak if they want. On the issue of the, you see, they propose that what the bill should set out is the trajectory that they see, which is not necessarily what Parliament sees and the government sees. At first, you know, you transfer the assets, you create an established infraco, then you have share capital through a public company that you declare, and then you privatize. Well, you can't put that sort of thing in a bill unless the committee itself agrees on privatization of infraco. And we have no mandate from the ANC. Our party has not discussed this matter, and we will not agree to it. You see, one should leave that open and flexible, right? I know you will disagree, Inca will disagree, but we'll see with open and flexible. You may well have to be privatized. Even when I'm Shadow Minister for Internal Media and the Government, I'm not sure to support privatization. But it's not something you put in a policy, it's a policy issue. And in any case, it's not utterly clear. There are hints of it, but it's not explicit. And they are saying, let's make it explicit. That's a policy issue which I can tell you now, we have rejected already as an ANC. In the portfolio committee, then we can acknowledge in our report that the two parties are not having this sort of problem. Then, the talk about licensing. I think we more or less will try to have some of the solution and machine accounts in it. It's fine if you propose the two licenses. The decision that has rolled out to the licensing about the distinct and different roles between Sente and Infraco are determined by what the shareholder mandate provides for. It's not something ICASA can decide. But she made a very clear choice. So they are covered there. I think they will contend with that. They had an informal exchange with them, and they seem to be okay with that. Then, they wanted an exemption from the requirement to lease their facilities to third parties. The department explained what the EA does in its commercial arrangements has to be consistent with the ECA and Competitions Act. And because of that and other reasons, they seem to say it's fine. They're going to drop that exemption. On the merger filing, the Competition Commission mercifully came here and is very active in our committee, and they've indicated that's not an issue. Because, Realtel is happy with that. Then we have the constitutional problems. In effect, what they basically say is that, on the one hand, it could be unconstitutional, the specific and unique privileges, the preferences given to Infraco over other, not least state-owned enterprises, let alone private sector ones. So the argument is it could be seen as constitutional, and it could be seen as unconstitutional. We thank them very much. It's not helpful at all. It just consumes a lot of time. And, you know, really, I'm old now. Maybe for the younger members, it's useful to read this stuff. So for kind of like me, it was a theory and dream and so on. And it's got major challenges in fulfilling the role of shadow minister of the general media. It's a bit too much of my time. When we look at the object of the Act 4.2, we simply can't do that. That leads to the earlier point that they want in the Act issues of policy and strategy to set out in the most comprehensive sense. No bill does that. No government does that anywhere in the world. Because then they have to come back to Parliament each time. And governments generally don't like Parliament. Even a relatively weak one like Parliament. They don't like to come back to it. Right? So, you know, they're not going to be in 9 hours. We don't want to run sheep and then they just run. So then we go to a whole lot of consequential issues. Extension of servitude. I'm just wanting to remind you, Sandra, what is the extension of servitude?
You said that that's already been catered for commercially. It's already commercially agreed between Eskom, Transnet and Infraco that they would give us access to their servitude. So this is just a statutory confirmation of that commercial arrangement.
Right, okay. Then the rest of the section should be catered. This is also not a transparency. The rest of the bill made little sense to me. Because unfortunately, you're referring to sections of a bill, version 1 or whatever, when you're in version 205. The one that we know is the one that came to Parliament. So they refer to section 7.2C2, 10.2E, provisions don't exist yet. I wasn't generous and liberal enough, and I had no time to actually go to older versions of the bill, which I didn't have in any case on a Sunday, to check it out. But I did read the paragraphs, and to the extent that they made sense, I'll make some notes and we'll include them in the phase 2 discussion now. And when they didn't, they are free to write to us relating to the relevant provisions of the bill. Then they had a whole lot of provisions to amend the bill which flow from this. Something actually I thought was quite useful if only we agreed with their position. You know, like what they wanted us to move paragraphs around, which is quite more coherent than me, except that we don't agree with that. You know, the notion that you move the paragraphs that deal with, like, what you are for, and then the conversion, and then the privatization of the fees, right? So that would have worked if we accepted it. And I just suggested a lobby for those of you who are here from outside the committee. Personally, you know, I'm different from the department and from the institutions here. I don't mind if you rewrite the bill the way you've done. But you can't be genuine. They have to be approached, you know, because they you know, as I tell them, we've read it in complete votes in this committee. Well, the previous committee, the way. Completely read it to them. But to change one comma, required like a 25-minute discussion because departments spend hours and hours on the book. And you know, and they're stuck on this thing. They don't want to change it. And we have to fight with them alone. Imagine lobbyists from outside the stakeholders. So I don't think this is a very policy thing to do, but it's your right to do it. It's your right to do it. And if you've got a DG like me or a chair like me, hey, I'm easy. But you've got to work out now what Porsche. Unfortunate things to start on. So, I don't know what she did, but the point is, it wants to be a bit more tactical. In any case, thank you very much for yourself. The final thing to say, which I think is a policy issue, you see, for better or worse, the climate is in a market economy. You can understand the term, a social democratic market economy. Because I don't know what national democratic means. So, we have to go by what we to a certain extent. And what we have to recognize is that there are laws that define relationships between companies, even state-owned companies and private companies. And there's a sense of fair play. And all we have said to the two parties, or the three parties really, but the two parties, which is partners and mail shops, can you guys meet and settle these issues? I'm going to ask Edward for more help. This is an interesting thing we've got. There is a commercial arrangement group between Realtel and the department. And it's not really germane to our bill. Because really, we don't interfere. Yeah, I don't think Parliament has a role in that. But we need to discuss it. It's really interesting. The first time I've experienced this, and we have to talk to you about what are the parameters with which we operate. But as the DC rightly says, and committee members see, with some of them, some of us do and some of us don't, that commercial arrangement has meaning and implications for the firm. Partly because of the history of, you know, Realtel basically, to summarize their argument, I think it is this. They feel aggrieved that they came into the second national operator sector with all sorts of promises and expectations of governance. In fact, they were going to take over the full services network. And then what happened, this is their interpretation, government
like let them down. And realize suddenly that hey, these assets that we've got are very valuable. And we cannot allow a duopoly, that's the word, to persist because there's no guarantee the end consumer will benefit. Now they will be technically comfortable with that. That is really happy in the state owned enterprise state owned because we trust them more to do what we want them to do, which is reduce the cost. But then you see, this is an ideological come policy perspective. What the law says may be different. So what we want is some sort of settlement between the department and Neotel that prevents, not that Neotel is certain, that because of certain legal or verbal, sometimes even verbal agreements are legally processable in a court of law, you know that more than me. So what we want is to avoid Neotel now, feeling they've been totally agreed, we do need a second national agreement. We want to avoid changes in government policy, leading to consequences that are negative just for them, it's not fair. We want to avoid a situation where they take the government to court over that contractual deal, and then our bill gets caught up in the midst of all that. And we want to see whether we can't instruct them to sort out their agreement by the 14th, but to the extent that the parameters of an agreement are there, we want to see what the implications it has for the law. Hopefully nothing. But more importantly for our report, so that A, we can send our report to the people and we appeal to both parties to continue negotiating and find another ground without in any way deviating from the crucial role that Infraco plays for the development of state, but recognizing that the free market players also are important to us. And what we want to say in our report is that we will monitor to the extent we will consult with your office and find out what would be our role in monitoring a commercial agreement. So in our report is more where we're likely to this issue. So that's where we are. The thing you should reply now. This model is confusing. I've never experienced that. The two young men here are sharing for the first time. Peter was a senior backbencher will tell you, I don't believe it's community. Or Commissioner Conlow, well, she thinks the whole of everything should be nationalized, so it's not the waste of time. So, you know, the truth is that none of us have experienced it before. Maybe she's experienced it, but it's a new thing. It takes the role of Parliament. And on the department side, they feel, basically, that they haven't done anything wrong, that government has the right to do what it does, constitutionally sound, that in fact, while they didn't give them the full services network, they came to the rescue of New York what they argued, in other ways, without which investment they made, New York would have been in trouble. Now, we can't discuss the rights and wrongs of this yet. We're not a court. We've just covered the truth. Now, this is a reasonable summary of where things are. And we've mandated the two of these guys, especially Bong and Corsi, because, you know, he overlaps the two committees, to work with them insofar as it's necessary to come to some sort of at least broad agreement by, let's say, you know, Monday or so.
Wednesday.
So we set a reasonable, the committee say, now, is there anything we need to talk about yourself? All we want is our money. It's for them, together with these two guys, particularly that guy, Wayne Jesus, to sort it out. And if Bonnie Quincy and them are to fly to Swanee, Petronia, whatever, they will put them in. Okay? So that's a report back. Similarly, we will give you a report back from the subcommittee today to the extent it is possible. Because you remember, their firm has not been processed by capital. And we are not obliged, nothing in the constitution exists before a firm. Although, to be fair, you see, all the bills on local government, every bill came to us, even before it was finalized by cabinet, to expedite the process. You know, and sometimes I was surprised to see some of the things we suggested in the initial processes that both Bollywood and Mahdi said, they're not obliged to do it. In the cabinet version, they've already introduced at the same time. So it's been done before, but you know, if you, you know, younger and so on, the older generation, from 94 to 2004, they gave us, in my committee, local government, they gave us most of the process before. You know, like in the 2003 version, but still, it was before 1 month from the committee government, so it's been done before. But for now, we deal with the subcommittee and we report back to them Friday. Okay. I said I was going to say very little.
Yeah, that was weak by your standard.
This is really that. Okay, we are okay, assume that we're not going to change the name of the tool, so we can go.
It's the first phase.
Chief, my name is Seed. The first amendment that we've affected relates to the long title, the area printed in bold, which essentially communicates the purpose of the bill. And you will note that it relates to the licensing. What we had in the certified bill was specific wording in terms of the granting of the deemed license. We have watered that down to more generic language to provide for the licensing of the Broadband Infra Pty Limited. We believe it corresponds to the spirit of discussions during the last couple of days.
Any comments you go?
Thank you, Comchi. Comchi, I don't think you want us as the chief statewide advisors to comment as we go along with you on the NEMA change. But if you'd like to comment and just matter putting for the licensing of Broadband Infra Co in the long title. Does prevent us from the constitutional challenge. Now, this is not contradicting what I said yesterday. In fact, reinforces what I said yesterday. I indicated to you yesterday that we have grappled considerably with the categorization of the bill. The minute we put into the bill, into the long title for the licensing of broadband, then we are accepting that it needs to be licensed, and then it would have to be licensed in a particular way, and that would bring us within the ambit completely in my view of the EPA. And we're going to have difficulty in then arguing for the deeming provisions. In fact, we were comfortable with the wording of the long title in the original formulation. I can explain that to you in a great length, but I won't. I'd rather incorporate that in the motion of this committee. Of course, we can't tell this committee what to do, and neither can we say to the parliament, but we're just giving you the benefit of our thoughts on the matter. Thank you. You see, Chairperson, it would appear to us that this deeming license is purely incidental to the main purpose of the bill. Thank you.
Does members want to comment? No. On the partners? Response? Okay, someone
thank you, Chair. Yes, I mean, we also have to put on the record, on the public record, that we concur wholeheartedly with the sentiment that we've expressed by the State Law Advisor. We don't believe that the intention of the bill is to create for the licensing of IFPCO, because it is an inappropriate bill to do so. The State Law Advisor has put it very well that if licensing has to take place in the ECA, given that the type of license contemplated here is existence in the ECA, i.e. an electronic communication network service license and or an electronic communication service license.
Sorry, can I just interrupt a procedural thing? This is not a public hearing that ended yesterday. So strictly speaking, only members of the committee and our committee, which we will send a scream on the rooftops about, we will try. The research is allowed to speak. I suppose the committee takes a seat. But the truth is that we have also allowed in certain situations for people to speak. And I think given the complexity of this problem, if we allow Neotel to speak, and I don't see a problem, I don't think we should allow our people to speak.
running that 15 times. So I think people should get out. This will be lower than an alpha. Okay, so I'm just ruling, and I'll just respond to the review that arises. I think it's fine. If you're here and you want to say something, that's fine. But please do not delude yourself. Very few committees. I think you're the only committee that allows it. Once the public hearing is over, it's only members of the committee. But we have been very, I don't think anybody should believe. It's fine. And it's helped us enormously on previous things. But just that, you know, you can't go to another committee and say, well, we did it in public enterprise. And we're not really speaking to the world. But I think it's fine. Okay? Is anybody unhappy about it?
Chair, we're happy to accept the advice of the circle advisors in this matter. Licensing provision issue is also a matter that still requires discussion. So, for some reason, we're quite happy to accept it as such.
You see, can I just say this? One issue is to understand is not taking any policy decisions on even the amendment. That will be in phase two once we've got the discussion. Right? But what we could say is that this thing is as it advanced until we've considered both sides. But if it's not asking too much from Mr. Daniels, if they can give us a short memo, it'll help us. And help them and help me and tell them whoever wants to speak. Thanks.
Yeah, just I think I agree that we'd like to see the memo for this. My question is, if we revert back to the original phrases, it's still mentioned that the entity, as we got it, hadn't granted an EPI, an ETMH. So that's also referring to the license. Nothing is the license being granted, but it is regarded having been granted a license. How do you comment on that?
Committee, I prefer dealing with this in the memo, otherwise we need to respond fully. But to answer you as succinctly as I possibly can under the circumstances, we're talking about the provide for the licensing, and that suggests to me looking at it that we're going to go through a particular format. What this bill is saying is we have Infrato, you actually can do the following things that you want to do. So you have a license to do that. We're conferring that license on you as following. We're saying you have that. But it's temporary with the proviso contained in 6(2). Saying, Minister, you talk to your classes. Basically, you want to make certain that everybody that you have the terms and conditions so that Infrato doesn't do a whole lot of things. But you're saying you have a license. When you talk about it, I guess, the proviso, the licensing, you're actually saying to set up a licensing procedure in my view. But I'll deal with that in the memo if that's in order.
No, it's fine.
Chair, I believe that our representative from DOC had some comment. I just also wanted to request Mr. Daniels, in relation to the long title of the Act, as is in the case of the preamble, there are different rules of interpretation that apply to the preamble and the long title of the Act. So I would also, just what informs our acceptance of the position with regard to the constitutionality of the advice is the long title in relation to the actual standard provision has a different role and interpretation value. And that could also just be addressed in the memo. But I think it's the chairperson of this committee's advice to put the matter in the balance, noting the constitutionality concern from the federal advisor, but focused approach insofar as we need to go and match what final wording we have on that provision with constitutionality in any case.
You want this signature?
I think one of the issues that you can have. In the process of that projecting and now outlined in terms of dealing with licensing in particular as an issue that still needs some negotiations and discussions. But what I would want the department to do at the end of the day is to, over and above having heard what everybody has to say in terms of the public hearings, etc., especially as it relates to licensing, is whether the amendment as it stands now is based on trying to accommodate concerns that have been raised by the different stakeholders, or is it because it is challengeable in a court of law? So that when they make all the discussions, I think that should form the basis of what would at the end of the day appear in the bill as we look at it as a committee.
Can I just add to what, that's exactly what I was thinking in my head, right? You see, there are two sets of issues that are related, right? The one is, and this is the first one, and this is something we need to discuss with Andra really, also during tea time. What I understand, Peter, also because of the thing is, partly we have to do what is constitutionally and legally fair and least challengeable. And sometimes, what is constitutionally and legally fair may not may be more challengeable than what is reasonably legally and constitutionally sound, but most importantly has won the stakeholders over. Do you understand what I'm saying? In other words, partly the way I see legislation, and my committee, fellow committee chair, don't agree, and maybe many committees, legislation is partly about setting up policy and so on, but partly about the outcome of negotiation. Now, if you look at all the stakeholders, Emma, they came here saying this thing is unconstitutional, this thing will not sell, it's undermining the ECA, Paris is a roundabout way because neutral said the same thing. So then the option we came to is let's amend the ECA to a schedule to this act, which can be done, as you know, we've done it in the past. And they were not comfortable, I think, GOC, I don't know what happened, but in any case, now they come for the one-line amendment, which is going to cabinet today and tomorrow, next week. And all the parties were asked yesterday, and I think all of them, but for Neotel, who said they come back, said, okay, we'll be happier with that. Which means they wanted this out from here, and they wanted that, meaning the one option. You came back and made a very forceful case to say this is sound, this is constitutional, we will defend this to the death, so to speak. You may be right, but we also have to carry these people with us. And then we may decide that let's just go for option one, let's go to option one, the ECA Act. Or we go for option two, which is leave things as they are because you are utterly convinced, which means all these parties are going to be up in arms again and are more likely to challenge us. Or we go for option three, call it the Peter and Richter option, which is to have both. Those are the things before us. But for me, close from what Felisa said, I would rather have one that both has the cooperation of the stakeholders and is reasonably legally sound, rather than one that is ironcast and ever can defend, whoever can defend in a court of law. But finally, I'm not naive. All of these people, well, most of these people, almost all of them, have got their finances overriding any other consideration. And no matter how wonderful we do this thing, they will still take us to court. The issue for us as a committee is to do the best we can within the limited resources we have. We are very pleased to see senior state law advisors. I've never seen this since 1998. I'm not going to tell anybody about this, because then every committee is going to say they want the police. And everybody's going to say, because Enver knows me, and he also has a certain political identity, Sarita. Therefore, he came to this committee. And then they're going to paint one story in City Cliff, so to protect him. I'm not going to tell anybody, you and your team, if you come here. But that's my point goes from what she's saying. And I think it's something we'll find you in this afternoon. Thank you.
Would you have some...
Thank you, Conti. Actually, four of us here, but don't tell anybody that either. Conti, on a more serious note, I did say yesterday that we did study this bill very carefully, and I say this, and to repeat it again, we do defend the book. Just to advance further our argument, I will refer this committee to Schedule 4 of the Constitution, and it's the only reference in the Constitution which I can find related to state-owned media. But it in fact relates to a media controlled directly or provided by a provisional government that has a qualification that is subject to Section 192. I can't find anything else in the Constitution which makes a state-owned media controlled by the national government subject to 192. Of course. This Parliament has decided in certain respects that we will be subject to that. And in looking at InfraCode, we studied at great depth these constitutional provisions. And so you are right in the sense here that we will defend the into the death, as it were, and we are satisfied with this. And so, reverting back to the proposal that has been made, you see, the thrust of this bill is the creation of Broadband InfraCo Pty Limited. That is the object that the state seeks to achieve. Whether it's for a license or not, it's purely incidental. We are saying that you will perform this function, and we're saying so that we don't inhibit you. We as Parliament are saying, and I'm suddenly part of Parliament for the purposes of this discussion. We are saying you can do the following. We do want to take these concerns that people have expressed about licensing, and of course, you don't want InfraCo to run amok. You don't want it. In other words, we want some regulation. We are saying the executive by itself isn't in a position to regulate that, and we create what is, in my view, our view as an office of the Chief State Law Advisor, a very important regulatory function for ICASA. ICASA tells the minister what it wants InfraCo to do, and then ICASA says, after they've done all of that, give us all of that, we'll check it to make certain we're happy with it, and then we publish it. And so we create that, and of course, what it does is, it brings InfraCo in line with the standards set by Parliament for the rest of society, in my view.
I'm having You know, sometimes you hook the GPA into the car and you want to go to a place where you have 5 minutes, but you know 3 quarters of the way. So you program the car to tell you how to get there. You get onto the main road and your route, the shortest route, that go left and the biggest route you go right. And you end up going around in circles again to end up passing your house before you continue, because for instance, that's the pathway. Why I use that is that this, in some ways, it's unfortunate that this afternoon session is only happening this afternoon. Because this afternoon session, we would have been talking about what would have happened in the cabinet, because that is confidential, until it passes in cabinet, would pass a lot of clarity on a lot of the issues that we discussed. Because by and large, we find great convergence exactly with what Enver was saying. So there's that, with everything that she's saying, so there's a great deal of convergence that can only become public after next week, Wednesday. So now we sort of like this licensing question. I don't know that I can flag in public, but I mean, if you did have a separate thing, you might be able to get some potential of flagging. But basically, so it worries me that actually every single thing that you're raising and discussing is resolution already on the table, actually from cabinet this morning, that covers to a large extent, comes in quite strongly with some of the stuff that Enza and Peter said.
I think we should go on to the next, but before that, it's just that we have taken that decision to proceed because we found ourselves discussing this stuff. So we must just avoid that. When we say that put something in abeyance, let's do so and proceed, or otherwise, or we think that.
Okay. Going to proceed. We received. Well, during the first round of discussions, various entities commented on the alignment of use of terminology between the Electronic Communications Act and the Infraco Bill. The Electronic Communications Act, in general, distinguishes between electronic communications networks and electronic communication services. And you will find that in the preamble, one of the first examples of ensuring that reference is made to electronic communications, in the past we just referred to communications, and particularly instead of using the term infrastructure to refer to networks, and where relevant, refer to services. So the changes in the preamble are essentially alignment changes with the terminology used in the ECA. There is one term that I'd just like to highlight, was discussed yesterday as well, which we haven't yet changed, but I would like to bring the committee's attention to it. The reference to underdeveloped as opposed to underserviced areas is used in the preamble, and it's something that the committee perhaps would like to consider and debate as to the use of terminology. Once again, just to highlight again the difference in the case of the term underserviced, it's very much referenced with regard to geographic area, which may be underdeveloped or developed but underserviced. So I know that Mr. Hendricks had some comments in that regard, just to flag that for the purposes of discussion.
Okay, I think there seems to be some sort of consensus that we refer to both underdeveloped and underserviced, so that we cover all areas that needs to be covered. And I'd like maybe later to just look at the wording. I'm sure we can improve the language of the preamble, but it sounds a bit awkward at the moment.
Chairperson, does that mean that infrastructure will not be available or active in any developed areas? Because if you put it only on in under, does that exclude the other areas? How can we talk then about competition getting the prices 35% for Telkom?
And now my understanding is to expand as we gather here in partnership.
My understanding is the same as yours, Chair, that in fact the changes that we will introduce will ensure that the response is to underserviced, whether it's underdeveloped or developed, if it's an underserviced area.
Any other questions in terms of the additions? No? Then, yeah.
Therefore, they're all outside of the license. not something that should be too much deeper.
Chairperson, although the preamble has a limited legal force, as far as I am aware of, I think the intention of the preamble is, why are we bringing this forward? Why are we doing what we are doing? So that is the whole reason why we put it in the preamble, is to give an indication of why are we bringing the legislation to Parliament. So it's got nothing to do with what Ricardo puts in his license or not. But we are saying that there's a purpose why we are undertaking this function. We're not just doing this for fun. We're doing it for a particular reason. We want to expand services throughout the country, particularly underserviced and underdeveloped areas. That's the whole purpose of bringing infrastructure and to bring down the cost.
So, and there won't be any harm in any event if it's stated in the bill itself and reinforced in terms of the license itself. I don't think there is a fundamental contradiction.
Yeah. Monica, you just come to before.
That's what I would say. But it's also, one of the other reasons is also right from the beginning that we will bring down the costs in competition with Telkom. So if you refer only to under-service or under-developed, it seems to cut out the other end. Why don't we just need to bring out all those services? Why do we have to put in under?
No, Chair. But maybe you see, Chair, that's the first part, but if you go to the second part and read the second part, it's talking about affordable access. Whether that's not going to cover what you're saying, I don't know. But if you read the second one, it's moving away from the underserviced, underdeveloped, also talk about affordable access without limiting to underserviced or underdeveloped. I don't discover what you're saying.
Two things. One is, I think a very interesting question. I think the argument is the ECA provides, ICASA decides what way you deliver. They will decide whether it's underdeveloped or underserviced. Right? But in that society, why we should put that here, apart from the policy to change, because the regulation is independent, but the policy is determined by the legislation. Now, I don't know, you see, this is an issue I need to talk to Angela about, because apart from everything else, and the two-shippers in Stockholm, and want to suspect that, but the truth is that underpinning the comments made by Edna are the relationship between, and I don't understand this, our fund for here, which can establish a regulator, and if the regulator doesn't do what you want to do, the government can instruct it to do what it wants to do. I don't know that that's possible. You know, I want to talk to you outside this meeting, right? This issue is arising. The one is, the answer to that question may also be relevant to Chemist, you know, because here it says, they're independent, they can do what they want. The issue of license, they can do it too, but your minister has lots of policy guidance in their policy. And in a way, we're providing that by saying that this is what they need to provide to underdeveloped areas. Now, the meaning is, the question is, does it have any value in their independent function of issuing license? Will they look at this bill and say, that bill says we have to issue the license there? They'll say, no, to hell with it. They can't decide for us. That's an issue I don't want to discuss here. But the more important thing is, I think money you are covered. I think need be, as I look into it, you can say something about underdeveloped, since you say underdeveloped, and you can say services, comma, particularly to, or especially to, underdeveloped, especially to, or particularly to, underdeveloped and underserviced. That means it's generic, but it's main purpose is obviously yourself in the
Chief, if I may, just first of all, with regard to the issue of whether we require this wording in here, just from a legal point of view, I agree with Michiela that the ECA already has a regulatory framework around underserviced areas. And that the license, the network license and the services license will already cover that. However, I think the, and Mr. Karim steered in that direction, the key issue is a private operator with these licenses would have a discretion as to whether it wants to go and invest in those areas. This is exactly the distinct identity difference between InfraCo and those operators. As far as Mr. Hinnitz's comment is concerned with regard to the preamble and its legal force, of course the same applies to the non-title. Again, the issue why, or the our intention in introducing it here was to present the distinctive factors or criteria related to InfraCo as opposed to other operators. The actual final wording of the preamble obviously still something to be decided, but just to give you the rationale in our minds in terms of reflecting these objectives in the preamble.
We have the gentleman next to Mashallah and Daniel Sam. Do you still want to comment? Alright, and Daniel Sam.
Sorry, I just want to make the point that I actually disagree with that interpretation, because the operators don't have a discretion as to whether or not they have to serve unserved areas. It's a license obligation that is given to the operators. So if InfraCo is going to have licenses in the same categories as the existing operators, then they will have the same license obligations. It's not at our discretion to decide whether we go to an unserved area or not. So that's incorrect.
Maybe a two-line answer. When you apply for a license with ICATA, do you say I'm applying for a particular purpose or area or reason? ICATA might not agree with you. ICATA might tell you part of your conditions are you have to do additional things. Would that be correct? Maybe your co-chair can assist us.
I think it can't have to speak for themselves. The point is, if it's not a license condition, and it may not necessarily be a license condition to go into the service area, InfraCo, whether it's a license condition or not, has to. That is the point. We're not saying that license conditions may not set universal service obligations. That's not what we're saying. We recognize the framework of the ECA. What we're saying is if the ECA does not, and license conditions does not oblige, you know, to be able, in terms of the InfraCo mandate, to go there.
Yeah, look, I mean, just reinforce what Peter said, this is why we want to bring the bill. It's not part of the legislation. It's why we want to bring the bill. I mean, I don't see anything wrong with it in theme. Eric, do you want to comment on it?
I guess the most important thing is if you are issued with a license, there are terms and conditions, and those terms and conditions will be generic to all licenses. First will be competition issues, you know, non-competitive practices that we'll have to make sure that do not happen. There will be interconnection issues. There will be numbering issues. There will be universal service obligation issues. I think that's the thing that we're talking about, which would be imposed on granting of the license. And even the license fee itself will be determined by ICASA. So the licensing framework is the remit of ICASA to determine how you operate in that sector, in terms of all those elements that I have indicated. But if you wish to do over and above that, as long as it's not seen as inhibiting other people or giving you fair unfair advantage or whatever, then that will be fine. But I think cognizance should be given to the fact that when you are issued with a license, there are what I could call rights and obligations. That's what a license is. It's a contract. Rights and obligations, which you have to fulfill. And then that's the main understanding that people, I mean, I hear here of service, unlicensed service areas, etc. Who determines who what those places are? It is ICASA. And also, if you say unsafe in what respect? In terms of licensing or access to some other services, but here we're talking about communication services when we say unsafe. They could be safe in other respects, you know, which of course could be handled by other divisions. But as far as electronic communication is concerned, we will clearly state, I mean, there's what is known as tether density, or what cell density. Today we may be talking about cell density. And we know that 50 million cells are available all over, even those areas. My question is, will that broadband, that fiber, reach those rural areas? Is that the intention? For that fiber to reach those rural areas where we say unsafe areas? Is it truly the case? It waits to be seen.
Yeah, I think my understanding of this matter is this thing is over and above what the terms of condition of the license. Perhaps we can use other words like targeted area or specially selected area as terminology, because Paris is right, you know, this under service on the developer is defined in the ECA, so it's not defined. We shouldn't make double definition in terms of the sector. But just before we give to Nyota, Peter, do you have something to say?
I hear Paris is saying, listen, that all these what we call operators have the same generic conditions. Now, with the hearing, I did ask if they could provide us with their footprints. It might be useful to see how they compare with each other if they all have the same conditions. I don't know if they will be prepared to give us their footprints sometime in the course of the next few days.
Yeah, some of that is Eric, and then we'll have the Department of Earth and DG.
Maybe Chair was covering the issue. There is no contradiction in what you have been saying and what ICASA is saying. You see, when you are granted the license, you are not specifically limited to service a certain area. The only problem is that the current operator has got a tendency of ignoring rural areas. That's why ICASA has to force them, as part of the condition of the license, to go to the rural areas or whatever area is defined by ICASA. Generally, get a license to operate throughout the country. The only thing we are putting these issues here as an emphasis that is part of the mandate of Infraco to focus on this area. Not tempering what ICASA can define later as an underserviced area, because ICASA got its own way of determining those particular matters. We are saying we are establishing an SOE as government, which must, part of its mandate, be able to handle this area. So there's no contradiction.
We're putting on the garage number one.
Correct.
There's no competition. Okay. Can we have the DG first and then near top?
Tier 1 and Tier 3 infrastructure. If we allude to providing services in underserviced areas, in my mind that contemplates Infraco being a services operator, access provider, not just a broadband provider. And that, I mean, if government's intention is to create a TNO using infrastructure that was initially intended for Neoco, the government would just say so. Because if it's government's intention to create a third network operator, from an access point of view as well, so at least make that clear for us so we know what the
we're not going to discuss on this issue because that's not our intention and that's not why what the goal is.
Well, Chair, I mean, if you say it's going to be a service provide access or services under service area, in a telecom lexicon, that conference is going to be providing services under, to underserved areas, not just infrastructure-based services.
Maybe, Chair, you are correct that we need to move. Look, the reality is that why those areas are suffering is because the operators currently can't lay out the infrastructure in those areas. So from where we are, there is nothing wrong for infra to lay out that infrastructure in those areas. We're not talking now about the end user of the access from the end user. We're talking about the infrastructure which must be laid out by infrastructure. It is the responsibility of government, we believe, as a committee, that that should happen. We're not talking about the last part where you put the phone, the last mile and so on. We're just talking about the infrastructure. That the mandate of infrastructure is to ensure that we have that infrastructure even in those particular areas because operators are safe. Thank you.
Yeah, look, I don't think we should go further in this because the fact that infrastructure is used for Tier 1 and Tier 3, so it just means, like the summer agent said, it's going to provide infrastructure. If we bring a new cable to pay, the Tier 2 networks will be covered by retail. It's not going to be covered by infrastructure. Infrastructure at this moment is not in a space to bring direct or pay a fiber access to a residential area to your house. That's not going to happen. I mean, it's happening in the States, but I don't see it going to happen anytime soon. Not yet. Any comments from members?
No.
No, did I have to move on?
Chair, the next, if I can move on then to section one. And perhaps, Chair, my understanding from Mr. Karim was that we won't go into the substantive discussion of definitions at this point in time. Therefore, I will just focus on highlighting new definitions that have been inserted so that we can move on to the substantive provisions. The first to highlight is that of electronic communication facility, and this is again an amendment consequential to the alignment of terminology, and this is taken from the ECA. The second change.
Would there be a problem to repeat the definition there? And before you go as defined in the Electronic Communications Act. So you don't have to go look at another act.
Look, I think it's just the other end of it. Normally we don't do that in legislation. I've asked this before. We don't normally do that. That's the norm. Is that right?
Are you
here?
Yes,
I'm
here.
So, you know, like the point Peter's making, I also agree with Peter, actually, but I know the department, and we've never had lawyers from Parliament before, so I thought, you know, maybe the department for bullshit, this is right. But the point is that electronic, you see what he's saying, Peter, this one, electronic communication facility means an electronic communication facility as defined in Section 1. He's saying, why don't you put the definition down? Normally we don't do that. And if we do it for this one, Peter, we'll have to do it for many others. Unfortunately, I don't like it, but that's the norm. But I understand why they don't do it. Is that right, Andrew? You don't normally.
We do it for the sake of clarity. There might be exactly. More substantive, though, while we're putting that definition.
That's what I was about to ask.
That's what I don't
understand. Yeah, I don't exactly.
And the same applies to the definition of electronic communication service. I don't know of what relevance it has to the discussion.
Yeah, I was just about to ask for that. I said, why is it here? Because it doesn't appear in the bill, yes? Yeah? Or does it? Maybe the new amendment is here in mind.
Chair, I think Mr. Hendricks has just responded on our behalf. In the preamble, and also we refer to electronic communications network and services, so that's why it's in there. We will double check the use of the reference facilities. If it's not used, we will delete that, but I believe there is a reference to facilities. In fact, I think it relates to the expropriation.
I think my understanding is that the reason why there is it's a systematic way of referring, so you put one layer back. So if in case if it's been changed the definition, then the whole thing, you know, whatever relevance refers to, can also be changed semantically. So if there's no...
That's a very good answer.
Answer.
Well, you're looking for somebody to join your office with. So they have a good answer. They haven't thought about that. Yeah. So
there's no other question from members then?
No.
Definition, yeah.
In general, we finish with the second.
Yeah.
Chairperson, yes. Taking into account what the Honourable Karim said a couple of times now concerning that we don't want this legislation to end up at court. If it does, we can make life much more easier. The word land in the first part of the vote, the word land is not being defined here. No, normally, land will be expropriated. It will happen. I would have thought this would be covered in the exploration section, but I don't know if it's really necessary to define land. But I think as we go, it has been raised, just to flag down on possible definition requirements, and then we can put them on later if it's required.
Chairperson, the reason why I mentioned this is it can refer to existing facilities, it can refer to resources, all these sort of things.
On technical things,
people can go to court. If there's a definition, the court will just stuck to the definition.
Okay, then we'll flag it for now, then, because we've got to come to that section later. And then we'll see what we're putting in, given the whole context of that section. So, shall we proceed?
Chair, the next definition that I'd like to highlight is the one in blue. Just to contextualize the, and you know that it's in square brackets, perhaps let me first explain why it's in square brackets. We would like to have an opportunity to refine this definition. We're seeking specialist advice from economists in the telecommunications sector. But the definition was inserted with reference to changes on the objectives of InfraCo, and to communicate the fact that InfraCo would be providing services below commercial cost, and to find a universally acceptable reference point to test that. So that is the intent behind the insertion of that definition, utility rate of return. And as I said, we seek your indulgence for further refinement of the definition. Of course, if there's comment, we will appreciate it.
Yes, I just
want to
comment.
I just wanted to propose that where whatever proposal or maybe wording that will be included should link to what is in Chapter 10 of the ECA, because there's a new methodology of determining pricing in terms of how telecoms charges will be charged. So that whenever in the future a CASA has to determine something, there might not be a conflict.
We will take that in consideration and get advisement on that. Thank you, sir.
I've just got a comment. I don't know if it's applicable, but when we try to define utility rate of return, the rate of return is a financial term that's been widely used in the financial sector.
So do we need to, and how is that going to conflict with the general understanding of the public? That's part of the worry about. And also you introduce the utility rate of the, which is the, like a different aspect of rate of return. Perhaps we can just flag it for now, but we need to discuss how relevant it is. Yeah. Oh, okay. Or if I think can reply to some of this comment.
Chair, I'm going to ask my DG also to participate in this response, especially from the economist's point of view, the application of a known term of a utility rate of return. What we need to go and test is what does this mean in the telecommunications sector, which we haven't done, and we will look at the advice as far as the pricing formulas and models in the ECA is concerned. But maybe the DG would like to respond to the application of the term.
Well, I mean, I think, Chair, what we're trying to do is quite a lot of concerns, even as you find in the object, when it comes to what is the role of InfoCo, to try and find a definition that contains this bylaw. Now, when you go for a utility in economics, it's a company that provides basic infrastructure. This is what we are doing, is basic infrastructure. And there is always a rate of return that a utility is allowed to earn. And that's why we said utility. What we were trying to do is create a separation between a profit maximization, a maximizer rate of return, vis-a-vis utility rate of return, which is not a profit maximizer, but rather maximizes something else entirely different. But that's why we wanted to be absolutely in line in terms of arriving at the definition that fits in with the ICT sector as a whole, but specifically the standard of operational terms, I suppose.
Where is this term referred to in the book?
Chair, we will come to that now. It's consequential to another amendment. And as the DG says, it relates to our attempts to narrow down the mandate and focus of InfraCo as opposed to other operators in the market.
Yeah, okay. In this case, are we okay to include this definition? Any objection from members to put this definition in section 1 for now?
Sure. So on the contrary, I think it's good. It's consistent with the discussion we've had. It makes it clearer to others who are feeling slightly threatened that we're not going to be competed with. So it's good that you've got it in the bill itself and you've got a definition. The only issue is the actual choice of words.
Okay, there's no other comments. We finished off section 1, the definitions. And then we've gone to our sector, like the Act, section 2. Here's one.
Chairperson, objects of the Act. 2. The objects of this Act are to provide for the transfer of InfraCo shares and InfraCo interest from ESCOM. Is Transnet already included the infrastructure, the shares, the part of Transnet? Does it include here, or what is Transnet, the main Transnet one?
Chair, the Transnet assets have already been commercially sold to ESCOM as an interim step in consolidation.
That was part of the restructuring. So there's no amendments, there's no change to section 2. Section 3. I see there's a change. Oh no, there's a change for section 4.
Yeah, can I just bring a question? You see, we shouldn't just look at changes. You're supposed to go through every clause. We've not done this. Ursula came and gave us a conceptual and cursefully dealt with the clauses. Now, we can't be dictated by the executive, the parliament. We want to know what does the clause mean. We agreed on the clauses. What does the clause mean first? And then, are there amendments? And if so, what? And we must also, Eric, we must get you in, because you know, I'm looking at my notes, and I don't apologize, because I've done a hell of a lot of work at what I've ever seen, much of which the DG wanted to do. I don't even know what the business is, I was really like taking one side of what I said. I'm not an auxiliary. It's a talk about a general problem that I was a very good advocate and passion, which I really feel very strongly about. And I think others do here. But you see, there is, I think, an obligation on the executive to also confront with key stakeholders and bring to a verbal, bring a bill to Parliament which is reasonably consensus, or at least has been reasonably consulted over. So in other words, you consult 100 people, and government has the right to tell all 100 stakeholders, I don't agree with you. I'm government, I'm elected, and I'm going to go and do it. That's fine, but have they consulted? And then they must bring Parliament. You see, it's about jumping on Parliament, things that we can avoid. You know, like there are things about this particular bill, as with other bills, as other committee chairs have said, that could have been sorted out before they brought the bill to Parliament. I remain, Mashila, convinced. Whatever the business day gives it, I can't control Linda Hinson. But the truth is, this whole thing of your one-line amendment, they could have sorted this out with the state law advisors, I'm convinced. There was no need to come to Parliament to do that. On that, I was used to fight. And I think I carried most of the study group members in the form. But the point is that I'm just saying what I want to say. But I do think that we have to look at your clause. Now, we're going to go to 2A, B, C, if members got any comments. Then we look at what the other parties have said. But I haven't been able to do my own notes. And the Boscati document self-made. But Boscati, you are noting, under 2, for example, the fact that the department's not making any amendments. But what about other people? Now, the question I'm asking Boscati, on the object of the act, in the submission, did we get any member of the public saying they want the objects to be changed? Did we? You're not ready yet. Okay, so we're going to come back to this. We'll get them done out, but we're going to get it done by Monday. Because I think somebody did ask this. One thing I know, under objectives of InfraCos, main objects and powers, people have said something. But I also recall somebody saying something about objects of the act should be expanded. Can anybody remember who said what in regards to that? Because my notes are not ready. But okay, we'll leave it for now. But I do know somebody said it. We need to know what they said and then say, no, we don't agree or agree with them. But it should be ready by Monday. So we just leave it in the bench for now. What did they say?
What did they say?
Can I raise another issue from right here? We must take it line by line because now, you see, if you look at the object of the act, B is saying licensing of InfraCo, which then relates to preamble. So, please, we are in phase one, Bruce. Don't be intimidated by the executive. Okay, it's you, right? We must go cross by cross. That's Parliament's job. We can't allow the executive to be too close.
Yeah, my task is going to do the changes first. But I think before we go into our checkup, we're typing in five at the team's ready.
Oh, okay.
So, the five, a 10-minute break for 15 minutes.
Chair, I think it's a bit unfair towards the department. Before we could actually, we weren't actually given an opportunity to speak to on section 2. Mr. Van Dijk had a first opportunity to speak. You will note that at the start we had indicated that we prepared this presentation where there is indeed a summary of all the comments clause by clause that we received. And what we have responded to. In relation to section 1, the comment that we received was with regard to the alignment of terminology, and that was from cell C. On section 2, what we had received up to now did not relate to, there was no comment on the object of the act as such. We can go, and we're quite happy, as indicated in this, at the start of this session, to explain to you what the intent behind each provision is. We agree that as far as the definitions are concerned, we'll save time.
Yeah, can I just clarify? I wasn't blaming you or anybody. I was just reminding us that this is the way we have to do it. There's no choice about it. Also to say, I hadn't actually realized, I must confess, that you have done one. But you see, you are dealing with the comments you received. The meaning you received means the one that also came to the parliamentary committee.
or the ones you received on the gazetted version?
Chair, there was a large degree of overlap, but there were slight differences.
All I got in my notes here is that object of the question. So there is somebody who has read something. And I think it's the one you're talking about. Yeah, but I'll find that it's my job, it's not yours. We can't expect you to do our job either. The fact that we haven't got our, let's call it the Bukkati, is not the Bukkati's fault either. We are talking both on this billion of silver, and the poor fellow has been very busy preparing other reports. So it's got nothing to do with him either. But on Monday we'll be better here. Okay? So, yeah, this is claiming the time. Nobody else has got a question to ask. I found one part. I think still people write it another one. It is actually Neotel interesting, and they're right here, they could have saved us time. Neotel said that in the object of the book, this is not in your department, to be fair to us. Your main, not your job, Denver. Not your job. The Parliament's job. So you've done it, but the truth is, you say there are no comments received on the object of the bill. But we have received comments on the object of the bill, and here it is. It's on page 41 and 42 of Neotel's submission. Where's Neotel? You guys are right here. You can point out it's your submission. Why should I be defending your case? I mean, really. They said we should include ECS license as one of the objects. Now, where is it? Whether you agree or disagree with this process, or whether the portfolio committee is irrelevant, we have to allow the public to be told, you brought this point up, this is what we think. Finally, if they don't agree with us, they must form their own party and stand for election. They know that. Now, object of the bill, you said four things should happen. Look at your page 41 and 42 of your bill. Should include ECS license, plus state exemption from requirement of to lease facility, under ECA plus exemption for merger filing. Now, in a policy discussion, we've taken the decisions already. So, in short, we are saying no to you, is that correct? To all of these things. Including, should include ECA license. Because license is covered in the generic. We agree to this. So, no thanks to you. And I don't know what the counselor said, but we, Eric, just read their submission and see. Because I think they also said the object should be changed. Then can I ask a question? Should we have as an object, though we shouldn't put too many things in there, the object, as I understand it, Elva, is just like a key piece, eh? But then you are giving the minister certain expanded rights to expropriate land. Do you want to say that that is also an object, or is it not consequential enough for you to put down as an object?
The question to Daniels or to myself?
Yes, yes. We'll ask Mr. Daniels to help us, and he will speak for himself and his team if he thinks he'll not agree with you.
Two points raised. The one was the comment by South African sit in that regard. But let me first respond to your question. In fact, I think insofar as this is a distinctive dispensation for Infoco. If I read your comment as a suggestion that we consider inserting a D, referring to the expropriation powers, I would concur with that.
Is that okay?
Yes. Secondly, as far as SASA is concerned, SASA's comment was with regard to the objective to provide services in the underserved areas. That has been taken up in the preamble, but it is not reflected here as object of the Act. It's rather reflected. Yeah, exactly.
Thank you.
So now we're going to, if we're going to close that book, yes.
Thank you, Communist, I didn't know if you wanted me to comment as well.
You can comment many and every time.
In regard to your question, bear in mind the servitude is a right and an asset.
which is going to be transferred onto the transfer date. And so technically, in my view, you don't need it here. And then in respect of expropriation, bear in mind the state has general powers of expropriation that dealt with in terms of the Expropriation Act. You don't actually need it here, but we're putting it in for greater clarity and certainty so that everybody outside of the framework that looks at it knows what you're providing for.
The thing to say there is that many people complain that the minister has got more expropriation rights for infrastructure sites is that it allows other operations in this sector. But you say it's covered in any case by the broader act. But it's not right. We can make it as a deliberate object, so it's clear. Okay. Let's leave it there. So now we can tick off, just to say what we're going to do, I should have spoken about. We can tick off 2A because we've agreed to. So it's an informal ticking off. Now the process here would be that if something fundamentally new emerged before we voted on the bill, then and then only will we come back to 2A. We are finished with 2A at long last, one step of progress. 2A. Right? And we are accepting 2C. And 2D, unless people are objecting a new one, which you will get shortly in wording, we are also accepting. Is that right? No, we've accepted 2C already. But the new 2D that's going to come. So the 2A is the only one we're not accepting. So we finish with clause 2 informally.
2B.
Yeah, sorry, 2B is the only one we're not accepting. 2A is finished. 2B, the 2C is finished, and the coming 2D is sorted out. Now, Chris, we are not coming back to this. If you have something phenomenally new, which is earth-shattering, then you come back. But we are finished. At long last, progress.
Okay, section 3. Chair, section 3 essentially provides for the transfer of the Infraco shares and interests from Eskom to the state. And we have already clarified the fact that the Transnet assets would have already been transferred to Eskom. So this transfer, this mandate of transfer, would include the Transnet assets. 3.1 essentially provides that what's important to note here is that this transaction needs to be executed with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance by agreement, commercial agreement, which I said had already been concluded in draft form, and not in draft form, it's been concluded subject to conditions precedent being satisfied. Those conditions precedent include the enactment of this bill. The 3.1A essentially provides for all Infraco claims and assets, liabilities, rights and obligations. It's in essence the business of Infraco and its assets to be transferred to the state. If I may just highlight that in 3.1A there's reference to assets, and what we have failed to do is to clarify that those assets does not include the licenses held by Transnet and Eskom. So our apologies in that regard, we will correct that. It was also a point which was raised by one of the commentators during the process, so it was just an omission on our side. 3B addresses the consideration, in other words, the purchase price to be agreed between Eskom and the state for the shares in the company. That has already been negotiated. The section 3.2 essentially provides for a situation where there is no agreement potentially between the state and Eskom in order to implement this transaction, what procedures would have to be followed. I can indicate, as I've said before, that we've actually already reached that agreement. The only withholding factor or condition
conditionality is that we get this bill enacted. So the provisions related to the mediation or resolution of a dispute in terms of getting the transaction implemented, it's actually not relevant at this point in time. It was provided for in view of the fact that we had no guarantee that the transaction would be completed prior to the enactment of the bill. You will note that the decision-making mechanism provided for in 3.2 is really the minister taking a final decision in concurrence with the Minister of Finance. Section 3.3 essentially provides for the effect of the transaction, what changes at the time that the act is enacted, has been assented to and signed in its second effect, what happens then. The state immediately becomes the sole shareholder and member of Infraco, and the minister in 3.3b is assigned as the shareholder representative on behalf of the state, exercising the necessary oversight as a shareholder over the interest in Infraco. So that those are the three main themes in section 3, i.e. the transfer of the assets and shares, if there's a deadlock in terms of the commercial arrangements that the mechanism is provided for, fortunately that was not necessary, and finally, what is the effect of this transaction? The state becomes the direct shareholder in Africa.
Okay. It's just a grammatical question. Under 318, should there not be a comma after ESCOM? Why is the obligations of ESCOM comma in connection with Infraco comma constitutes?
Chair, I'm not necessarily a language expert. It makes sense to me if that's a suggestion by the committee. We would, through the state law advisors, also we have the benefit of language editing as well, so we can insert that.
Chairperson, you know, I've always wanted to insert a comma in legislation. I mean, yeah. It'll be like a high point in my career.
I will tell you what Terence Provia would say, and what Pierce Boa would say, and what Dr. Blair Shami. Interestingly, it's a good, interesting question you raise, because, and I might want to respond to this, when we have proposed commas, the English language, that's how you use it. But in law, even when they use long sentences, they tend to avoid commas. And Ferris Provia, who is a very accomplished, in my view, and of all the legislation, would resist vigorously. And finally, we thought, look, he's such a helpful man. He works till 2 o'clock in the morning and so on. Won't care. So we gave him. So it's a new era now. Ferris Provia is not here. But I just want to ask, because it's a stylistic question. I always think it's better to have commas because it reads easier, and that's the way we do it in the English language. But the lawyers say that's not the case. You don't use in legal drafting commas in the way we do in the English language. And so is that right, or is that an old hack, an old order? Thank you.
I represent the new era, not the Corovia era. Yeah. And to tell you, I have a fundamental difference with Corovia as a person.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, many people in my office have of course grown up in the Provia era.
Yeah.
But if a computer must tell you, a comma is in simple English joining, whatever you call it, joining word, I suppose. And if you join this with a comma, it would be highly inappropriate, it would make no sense.
So
again, I suggest that we try and find a place where you can place you so that we can propose it.
Firstly, very quickly, for our own education, what would be the problem? Peter wants to come out between
That's gone in comma in connection with infracore comma.
No, that's why I'm saying the comma being a chairperson would be inappropriate.
What?
But because it wouldn't make sense, because if you took away constituting for the interest, then you just don't know what it's there for. You don't know what constituting for a co-interest is then linked to grammatically and
cybersecurity. Yeah,
and so Peter,
I would argue the other way around. It says which rights.
No. You're wrong all the time, Peter. But can I suggest that I find a place where you can propose a comma and you know what's pretty. But more seriously, chairperson, I agree with you. In fact, in my own office, I do try and put in the commas when I spot places where they've been left out. But we should put it in to make it easier to read.
Yeah. Can we just have a question from Chris and then Martin?
Thank you very much, Jefferson. For the sake of clarity, I think under 3.1, where it says the minister and PESCO, I'll suggest that we put the minister of, because if you say the minister, it would be the minister of health, that's a current and all that.
Yeah, that's covered in the definition. In the bill, it says the minister will be referring to the minister of health.
So we can't do it.
It's already been defined that it's like the practice for every bill that you know how to define with that particular balance for it.
It's a good question. I think also, partly in the way we from the official of chair, it's also to give members an opportunity to actually understand fully prospect. So, Comrade Chris, you're raising a good question, because what does minister mean? And they, what they always do in legislation, Chris, if you look at other ways, they always define minister in definition, so then they don't have to use the word again. Yeah. And they do that, that's what definitions are for, is to avoid the bill becoming too long. Because the word minister could be used 25 times in the bill. And each time you say minister of provincial and local government in your space, minister is defined there. Okay. So you're absolutely correct question, because which minister it means. You're absolutely right, is it the minister of finance or the minister? That's the point when you refer to any other minister, then you have to give the title. Because otherwise it can get confusing. But that's a very good question.
And also, I think just in addition to that, in the future, if a minister of public enterprise changes the title to minister of private enterprises, we could just change the name.
He's consistent. I really think he should go to the office. Good, that's also a good argument. So now, but the point, the quid pro quo is, if you ever raise this question again, which minister? The whip will summarily expel you. So the deal is, once we explain things like that, nobody, including those who aren't listening to this thing, will be allowed to. We call it that Chris G question. Please leave this committee.
Chairperson, I'm slightly intimidated after that. But if chair of many years could refresh my memory. Do you say minister for public enterprises or minister responsible for?
Nice to say you're responsible for because of the title change.
Yeah.
Good point, Peter.
Yeah. In the FAA, you said responsible.
Yeah.
And then you said
responsible for.
For.
I think that's an excellent position. Can we agree on that?
Yeah, excellent.
Okay, I'll then confirm that we will amend the definition of minister to read minister responsible for public enterprises. Our comments on the comments on three, just from a departmental point of view, our drafting approach has been where suggestions on comments and so forth have been made, editorial suggestions, if it doesn't change the meaning of our wording, we have adopted that. So that was just our philosophy thus far. But we're happy to accept the decision as it is.
So any more questions on 3A? I mean 3.1A. I understand that you mentioned earlier in terms of wanting to exclude the license. You're going to change wordings here?
Yes. What in 3.1A, with regard to assets, we would exclude licenses.
Can I clarify something there? If you're excluding licenses, it is because you cannot transfer a license without the company's permission. Is that the point?
No, that wasn't the rationale. But the point made by Mr. Karim is absolutely correct. Even if we were to provide for the transfer, we would have to get the ICASA permission to do that. The rationale behind it is that both ESCOM and Transnet still need their PTN licenses for their mission critical activities.
Okay, so we gather that we accept the changes of 3.1A. Then 3.1B, comments or changes from members? No?
Can I say something and nobody else has said? This money has been paid already, that's right, for the transfer. And this is in the public domain. So what is the figure? I'm just going to say. I've forgotten.
Chair, I'm going to have Smith, who's on the receiving end of this, to give you the exact quantum. Yes, it has been paid, and the agreement has provisions in relation to a scenario where the conditions precedent are not met and how that money is dealt with.
But is it in the public domain that we can know what the amount is?
I don't know. Let me get Dave to respond to that.
Okay.
So I'm not sure whether it's in the public domain. It might have been reported on in the ESCOM financial statements, which will be reported here. I'm not sure if there's a problem in disclosing the number here.
I don't know. I think it may be all right. Sorry? Huh? Yeah, if you want to. But I mean, Parliament has the right to know. And if we have the right to know, then we have to know. But if we don't have the right to know, we don't have to know. So I don't know whether we have the right to know. So maybe we can check that out. Okay.
Chair, if I may recommend that we will have a meeting with the committee this afternoon.
Yeah,
let's clarify the position of our DG and come back to you.
But as for the clause itself, I think we can accept 3.1B, not 3.1A until the amendment.
After the 327,
okay, section 3.1 is then accepted with the wording change in 3.1A. 3.2, question for a moment. There's no question in conflict to them. 3.3A? There's no problem there.
So can I just ask a question on 3.3A? We've had this before, I've forgotten, on the FAA bill. All of our services should drop the word "and member." And then you came back and explained to us why that's been a disreminder. Hands up, by the way. You can tell us, Canada, you can be tough on us and say, hey, I answered this question to you 6 months ago. Why the hell are you asking me again? And you'll be perfectly right. Hands up, members of the committee who remember, we asked the same question, Peter Bigmouth. You were doing it at SAA. Remember, you were sharing the story. Can you explain? Let me ask Peter. Peter, tell me why in 3A it's got the state becomes a shareholder and member of Infracorp. Why can't they dispose of the words "and member"? You were sharing, remember?
Yes. No, the answer that I made perfect sense, Jefferson,
but I didn't feel it necessary to remember it. But it did make sense because we did bring it up. It seemed to totally just...
Very good answer. I'm very well informed.
Why is it "and member"? It's a corporate governance word.
It's to conform with the terminology in the Companies
Act. All right, now, it's going to be clear. If anybody's asked this question again, and cannot answer, including you, have to resign.
Okay, take it. Okay, going to 3.3B. 3.3B. Right.
Is
No questions? Then we set the whole of section 3. And then that completes section 3. And I think it's 1 o'clock now.
And it's a normal commission meeting, finishing at 1. And so the rule is that there's no lunch provided. Secondly, we meet as a committee. We meet as a subcommittee at 3:30, of the three of us, and maybe Peter and the department. And then we meet again on Friday at 9 o'clock. And Friday we will sit to one of the committees.
Yes.
And yeah, we're meeting on Friday. Hold assembly, one as a committee, and then from 2 to 5 as a subcommittee. So members who have to go home are free to do so, but the rest of us, the three of us, we will sit to 5 and then report back to the committee.
The venue,
Brian?
Hold assembly chamber.
Hold assembly chamber.
I just wanted to check, my understanding was that last week the department indicated that it would make available that legal opinion to you, and I just wanted to check that that has been done. I believe it has. We also said that we would, in addition to this presentation, we would do it in table format.
Yeah.
The summary of policies we received. We have done that. We haven't yet given that to you. We will share that it's done today.
Can people return the card, please? The card that's been circulating that you've been signing. Oh, you've got it. Okay. And those who haven't signed, can you just sign the card there, please? Sorry?
Chair, just a matter of housekeeping, is it possible to get a set of copy of the Competition Commission's submission to the committee?
You're entitled to it. Gracias.